This is URN.
And this is the Popular Table. Hello, you might be surprised to hear us going out at 2 o'clock instead of the Culture Show, but this weekend is our special coverage of the Oscars. Yesterday we had the Silver Soundtrack do a 2-hour coverage of the Best Original Song and Original Score nominees, and later today at 5 o'clock we'll have a 2-hour special with the Film Show covering the major nominees and predictions for this year's Academy Awards. And tomorrow we will also have a podcast going out recapping what happens later tonight. But for the next hour, you are joined by myself, Ibby, Alex,
hey,
Shivani,
hey,
and James,
hi,
who is a newcomer to the show. Welcome aboard. And we will be discussing the Oscar So White controversy. So I think we need a bit of epic music to bring us into this. Here's the gorgeous bit of Here's the gorgeous bit of orchestral music that introduces the Academy Awards, and I think it's appropriate for us as well because we are just as epic. That is the epicness of the Academy Awards, and unfortunately that is not what we are discussing today. We are discussing one of its big failures for the year. For the second year running, the Oscars have failed to nominate a single person of colour in its acting categories. We also only have a handful of people of colour nominated at all. In fact, Sanjay Superteam, which is up for Best Animated Short, is probably one of the most diverse films out there nominated this year, which is a sign of perhaps failing times for the Academy. But we are going to be talking today about what the actual controversy is of Oscar So White. We're going to be comparing it to a few of the other award shows that have happened this year. And then we'll be trying to talk about placing the controversy within the wider context of Hollywood discrimination and lack of opportunities. So to start things off, 10 acting nominees, second year running, not a single person of colour nominated. Now, can I just open up to the floor and ask, based purely off of merit, can we think of people who have been snubbed for nominations this year?
Samuel Jackson?
For The Hateful Eight, absolutely. Any other call?
I'm kind of useless for this because really films is not what I know more.
Fair.
You know when you have lots of opinions about something and then someone puts you on the spot and then you're like, oh, wait, everything from my head just disappeared.
Okay, well, Shivani, I'll put you on the spot.
Oh, God, no.
You have the likes of Kitana Rodriguez and Maya Taylor from Tangerine. Idris Elba is probably the person who's been getting the most the most media attention for being snubbed for Beasts of No Nation.
I heard that he wasn't snubbed, he wasn't he was eligible for the nomination.
Yeah, the Academy sets a rule that if a film is on a streaming service such as Hulu or Netflix, as well as being in cinema, it is not eligible because it didn't have the 90-day cinema run before a Netflix release.
Yeah.
And so while Idris Elba was really good, he's technically not nominated, eligible.
Yeah, so his is less of a snub. The same can't be said for the likes of Will Smith for Concussion, and he of course has made a very, very vocal deal about it, choosing to boycott the Oscars. So has Jada Pinkett Smith. Lest we forget that there are other actors outside of the African-American community as well. Benicio del Toro didn't get nominated for Sicario, which is probably one of the biggest snubs in my opinion. Admittedly, I haven't seen all of the nominations, so I can't speak from a purely objective point of view. But from what I understand, looking at the other awards shows as well as the reviews, the fact that someone like Tom Hardy got a nomination for Best Supporting Actor, or Jennifer Lawrence for Best Actress over some of the people whom we've mentioned, is a bit of a travesty. let's not lie. So there's clearly been this discussion about it, and this is the second year running that Oscar So White has been trending, because it's the second consecutive year that we've had 20 exclusively white acting nominees. What do we feel about that with regards to how the Academy doesn't seem to have reacted to what was very valid criticism last year?
Well, I feel like even going back before, I'm not a specialist at all of who was nominated and everything, but I feel like even before, there may have been some people of colours, but it still was only a very, very small minority. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, I mean, it's you're not absolutely right. You can count off the thing, like you can count off the fingers on your two hands how many people of colour have been nominated. So that's a bit of it. And this is for context, is the 88th Academy Awards. So in 88
what
years.
What year are we in? Like, we're still in 2016, right?
Yeah.
We haven't gone back in time to...
Oh, okay. Sorry, that threw me for a loop just a little bit. No. No, we haven't.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah.
Just catching up.
Right? Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, which is even more interesting given the fact that the first person of colours to win was Hattie McDaniel back in the 30s for Gone with the Wind.
So basically the Oscars is getting, like, the reverse message from society.
Pretty much.
So society's becoming more accepting as a whole and more equal and diverse. The Oscars are saying, no, let's take it back.
Yeah.
Okay, just so we're clear on that.
I've got a feeling that it's almost as, you know, when you need, when there's a sickness or disease or something, and you know it's nearly the end, it's nearly been
eradicated,
and so it's like all on.
Yeah, it's holding on as much as it possibly can.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like. I mean, let's remember how the actual Academy Awards voting works. It is it's a specific body of industry professionals, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Science, who are divided between various guilds and their individual professions. So the actors have a separate voting block, the directors, the writers, etc., etc., etc. And each guild votes on its category, and then you then open up the voting for the entire Academy, particularly for Best Picture. What this means is that it's a specific group of people who hold the power and the potential to cast the nominations and to cast the votes. The overwhelming majority of the Academy are old white men.
There's a surprise.
I know. And in order to be a member of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, you need to be nominated by an existing member. So it is extremely difficult to break the trend of old white men suggesting other old white men to become part of their exclusive old white men club. This despite the fact that the current president of the Academy is a black woman. This despite the fact, of course, that the Academy has received a lot of criticism about its membership over the years. And I think the Oscar So White controversy this year has finally had a bit of an impact. The Academy has released a statement saying they are going to be actively working towards diversifying its membership through the use of specific quotas for the next couple of years.
See, I don't necessarily like that because it means that you're going to then have like the token trans or the token black or like, I mean, I want people to do well on their merits, not just because of their race.
That's one thing I was wondering in terms of membership. Is it Does it mean that? Is it for life?
Yes, it is for life.
There's no getting out.
Academy membership, it's for life. It's like the Supreme Court and the papacy, unless you quit.
Do they wait for one person to die for someone else to come in?
Oh, no, it's not a fixed number. It's not like there isn't a ceiling for how many people can be in the Academy.
Yeah, so they could bring in many more,
yeah. So there is that. I do agree with you, Shivani, but I think the problem at the moment is that there are a lot of talented actors and actresses and directors and just general filmmakers out there who aren't members of the Academy yet. And they probably will be getting in through this system. I do agree that it shouldn't become a question of tokenism, but I think that in the short run, because this is a short-term solution, by increasing its minority membership, the Academy then does open up the window for diversification. Because remember, you then open up the window for future nominees as well. And by including a more diverse membership, you then open up the window for them to then nominate others. It's the start of what could be a good cycle. It could also be a really half-hearted attempt at avoiding more backlash.
True.
Some people do use the argument of you don't want diversity for diversity's sake.
Yes.
But you've got to kickstart it, because as more people of colour, people of different races, different sexualities become part of the Academy, the more aware they're going to be of the films out there. Because a common thing that's known within the Academy is that they don't necessarily watch every film.
No, they don't.
It's why Pixar will almost always win if they made a good film, the animated film category, because that's probably the one the Academy have seen.
Yes.
Even if it's not the best. Love Pixar, but there have sometimes been better films nominated in that category. But the same thing goes for, don't want to put it like minority films.
Yes.
Is that with an old white male demographic being the Academy voters, they probably haven't seen the films.
Mm-hmm.
They probably don't seek them out. And that's the thing that's been argued, that they should set an age limit and then you're gone.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, if it's your job to do this,
but they don't.
But they don't.
They don't.
Like, it should be part of your thing.
It should be part of it, but they don't. This is the thing.
I would do this. I'd get paid to watch films.
But they do have other jobs. That's not their job.
I mean, it could be my sole job. I'm currently looking for work. So,
so if the Academy's looking for more members, including what could be their first ever full time exclusive member, it's Shivani. Can contact her on. Right, so we've got that issue, definitely. And I think part of that ties in with the fact that a lot of the minority films are also extremely low budget nowadays. Mm-hmm. They don't seem to get the same grip on getting premieres. There's always the eligibility issue with regards to when it comes out in LA. So it's not just in the States. It needs to be out in LA for 90 days prior to the nomination period to be eligible to get an Oscar nomination, because that's where the industry is. So there is a lot of that going on as well. I wonder what thoughts are regarding nominations for minorities in international films, because we do obviously have the best foreign language category, and it's not completely unheard of to have nominations in the foreign language. Marion Cotillard won for La Vie en Rose. Sophia Loren was twice a nominee for an Italian language film. We've had nominations for Damien Bashir.
And The Artist.
Mm-hmm. Well, The Artist is, I mean, it's, there is no language.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a French film.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that swept the Oscars, lest we forget. So what do we think about that side of it as well, where you do also have the potential for a lot of those films to get nominated for their acting roles or their direction, but they don't seem to either?
I think the same issue comes about of the Academy not seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love films, but I often don't see many foreign films because it's an extra layer of effort to when they come out in the UK. When you're sitting down relaxing, sometimes you can't be bothered to read. And I think it's just once again a problem of have they watched it?
Yeah.
I think there's a really big problem for English-speaking people to take the time to go and watch things with subtitle.
Mm. Why would we do that? Because it's so ingrained in our culture to be as lazy as possible.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that most things on French TV or in French films are dubbed when they are foreign. But still, when you begin watching stuff with subtitles, at the beginning it's a bit hard, but then you don't see them anymore. So I think it's just, it's an habit to take to go and watch films with minorities or from other countries. It's just,
I do feel like, as someone who doesn't necessarily seek out foreign films, I do feel like sometimes I'm there's a whole world of movies and things out there that I'm missing out on.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially because, like, I'm Indian, so, like, the whole of the Indian community that I know all talk about Indian movies, Bollywood films, and I just have no idea what's going on. I feel like there is definitely a world that I'm missing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I can attest to that.
I guess, like, I got kind of lucky that I was introduced to anime as a young kid, and so I was used to reading subtitles because normally the dubs were really bad. And so, you couldn't, as an English speaker and I think no other language, it's hard to tell if the Japanese voices are good voice actors because I don't know what I don't understand the language. So because I watch so much anime and I love Studio Ghibli, it's easier for me to then watch a film like Beautiful or like other foreign films because I'm used to reading subtitles.
Absolutely.
But for example, my mother, I tried to show her Akira, and I don't really like the dub that much, so I put on the Japanese version, and she had trouble reading it and paying attention to what's happening.
Yeah.
More casual moviegoers don't really watch foreign films that much because it's an extra layer of effort, and because of that, they don't make as much money. They're not as in the spotlight in the US, and so the Academy ignore them a little bit.
Absolutely.
But again, I would come back to the same thing. Same with my mum, was always watching stuff in French, and then I began wanting to watch things, English films and TV series, to watch them in English with the subtitles. And at first, it was really hard. And now she watches almost every film and TV series that she watched them with subtitles.
Yeah, but you said first it was really hard. Yeah. Most people would give up.
So going back to what Shivani said, most people are lazy.
Yeah.
Is that what we're going with for the Academy in particular? The flip side to that discussion is in the campaigning itself. Now, unlike a lot of the other awards bodies, the Academy takes a lot of subjective consideration when it comes to how films want to be nominated and want to be campaigned for. The best example of this is in its discrepancies regarding the lead and supporting acting categories. In every major awards show, it is the awards body themselves that decides what constitutes a lead role and what constitutes a supporting role. Whereas at the Academy, a film can decide to nominate a specific actor or actress for that, for whatever they want. Hence, Rooney Mara's nomination for Best Supporting, as opposed to Cate Blanchett's nomination for Best Lead for Carol. Now, the reason I point that out is because what this shows is that studios do have a pull when it comes to how films are promoted and how films get their Oscar nominations out. I mean, there's a massive amount of campaigning that takes place behind the scenes. Every single Oscar winner is backed up by an entire machine of executives, creative minds, and a lot of peers who campaign on their behalf. So I'm wondering why, what I'm trying to get to with that is, although we've discussed how the Academy itself has an issue with its demographic, clearly studios haven't done much to counter that either, because they haven't really done much to campaign excessively for minority roles. And what do we think about that?
Well, it's a systemic issue in the entire film industry. Like, I asked my flatmate yesterday, name the biggest black actors you can name. And she named about four. I think she named Idris Elba, Denzel Washington, I don't even remember who else she said, Kuito Ejiofor, which is still a recent one. He came broke through with 12 Years a Slave. But I told her to name white actors, and she had lists and lists and lists and lists and lists. Like, it's... they're not... unless it's an issue film, like a film about slavery, a film about apartheid, a film about an issue in the black community, civil rights, something of that, black actors aren't often cast in a role. That's why people... more liberal people seem to be campaigning for, say, Idris Elba as Bond or as Doctor Who. It's because
it would be amazing. That's why.
My Tilda Swinton is my choice for Doctor Who.
She would be fantastic.
Perfect.
Yeah. But we digress.
Back on topic. It's an issue of black actors rising through on just normal films. Like, what? Why couldn't Denzel Washington or someone be in just a normal rom-com instead of Matthew McConaughey or something like that? There's no reason for it other than an issue in the entire industry, and it affects the Oscars. There are less black actors that normally get nominated, and so it's normally not worth the studios to put their money behind it to campaign, because you're more likely to get Eddie Redmayne to win, or Tom Hardy, or another white actor. Mm-hmm. And it's an issue of funds and how many black actors there really are.
Absolutely. I mean, let's remind ourselves very quickly, in the last few decades, the major award, and this isn't just exclusive to the Academy, the major award winners for minority roles have come from issues films. You obviously have Lupita Nyong'o for 12 Years a Slave. You have Octavia Spencer for The Help. You obviously go back decades and you've got Hattie McDaniel for Gone with the Wind. But it's extremely difficult to come across minority actors who have won for non-issue specific roles.
I think that's just, as was mentioned, they're not getting the roles, they're not getting the parts.
Absolutely.
And it's something we've whined about a few times on the popular table.
And yet it's so frustrating in that it is still such a valid complaint.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. They're just not... They aren't getting roles, and it's got nothing to do with merit, because there must be actors of colour who are just as good, if not better, than some of the actors that we're seeing out there.
Absolutely.
So, sort it out, God.
There's obviously the discussion to be had in that sense of colourblind casting, and let's not forget that colourblind casting has led to some of the most diverse films that we've seen. Star Wars The Force Awakens, which has been both a critical and a commercial success, saw colorblind casting for its roles, and that is why you have a white female, a black male, and a Hispanic male in its leads. And they are absolutely fantastic, and it works really organically. And I think that what that shows is that a lot of times the industry doesn't seem to be representative of how the world thinks, and it isn't representative of how the world actually functions.
No, because they're in their closed LA bubble with, you know, rich white males.
Again, going back to the old rich white male.
That's why.
Yeah.
I think the issue isn't the issue, but the industry is out to make money.
Yes.
And they assume more white people are in the US and in the UK and Western countries and China, which is a massive new market, they're more likely to go see a white person. Mm-hmm. That's what they think.
Yeah, there's definitely a bankability question.
Well, clearly not, because of the success of Star Wars.
To be fair, Star Wars would have been successful if it was as bad as the prequels. I really love John Boyega in Star Wars.
I will give you that.
The prequels made so much money.
I will give you that.
But I think what's awesome, is Lucasfilm thinking this movie is going to make money anyway. Look how good John Boyega is in this role. Look how well he encompasses it. He could be white, he could be black, but he's black.
Doesn't matter,
because John Boyega is that good.
Yeah.
And Poe Dameron, like Oscar Isaac, is infallible.
He's amazing.
Inside Llewyn Davis is so good. But and Rey is like a breakout star, but there's still the money issue behind it. Like, they don't make Rey toys as much as they'll make, mm-hmm, say, a Poe toy or a Harrison... Mm-hmm.
Kylo Ren toy.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously not an Oscar nominated or Oscar worthy. I'm going into a slightly different one now.
Sorry.
But I mean, with regards to the question of bankability, the example I'm going to use now isn't one that is related to the Oscars, but I still want to point it out. When Sony handed over Spider-Man's rights to Marvel, and part of the condition for that was Andrew Garfield wouldn't be continuing as Peter Parker, and my heart is still broken about that. But when that deal was made, when it was passed over, part of the clause regarding casting for Spider-Man mentioned that he needed to be straight and he needed to be white.
Sony doing it again. It was written twice that it was supposed to be straight. Twice.
And white.
Yeah, and white. But
that probably means they want him to be Peter Parker instead of Miles Morales or Spider-Gwen or something like that.
Yes, I get that, but this is my thing. And of course, when the popular table had the massive blowout regarding Spider-Man returning to Marvel, we had a discussion regarding this, and something that kept coming up was, well, yes, okay, we're talking about, that means they're specifying it needs to be Peter Parker and not Miles Morales. Why can't Peter Parker be black? You've had a black Human Torch. You had Johnny Storm being played extremely well by Michael B. Jordan. Sue Storm, his sister, was white because, you know what? Interracial families exist. So while I agree that the logic behind that might be that they want Peter Parker, I don't necessarily see that follow through completely. You can still have Peter Parker be a minority. And some people would argue that the fanboys would be up in arms, but let's face it, there was a community or a section of the fandom who were up in arms about having a black stormtrooper. They got over it. There was a section of the Fantastic Four fandom who were angry about Michael B. Jordan. The film wasn't that great, but he wasn't what made it bad. And he wasn't blamed by any section of the community, the fan community, for being the reason it was a failure.
He seemed to come out quite unscathed.
Exactly. So I would argue that that's another problem. That's just having very specific ideas for who can play what role.
Yeah, that's entirely valid. With Marvel appealing to comics fans, making Peter Parker black might anger them. Well, not even anger them. It's just, what's the point of making Peter Parker black when you already have a really unique, interesting black Spider-Man?
True.
But the thing about Miles Morales is if they're introducing Spider-Man as new to the MCU, Miles Morales comes after Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And they will actually...
I think it wasn't so much necessarily that you have to cast someone black. It was more just what annoyed me was the wording of the contract, which said he has to be white.
Yeah, it should have just said Peter Parker.
The contract was so bad.
It should have just said Peter Parker, and you could very potentially just have colorblind casting.
Yeah.
And that's the issue with a lot of casting calls. If you look through some casting call websites, particularly for extras in major budget films, you will get an idea of quite how skewed race and gender wise a lot of the casting is, and this is it's a really disturbing sign, and that applies industry wide, not just for it's not just for big films where you have a character in mind. I mean, there's the obvious argument to be made that Peter Parker is canonically a white brunette and we should stick to that out of respect for the character, but even when it's casting for, as Shivani mentioned, things like, you know, a generic rom-com, you will still have specific races.
Just wanted to get right in,
which is a massive problem. So we've seen how that's an issue with regards to the casting side of things, and we've seen how that ties in also with regards to the campaigning. Alex, you had a really bright bit of news this morning regarding John Boyega. So would you like to share that with us?
So you have the Saturn's Awards, and John Boyega was nominated as supporting actor, whereas Han Solo... Harrison Ford. I forgot his name. Was nominated as a lead actor. And just people couldn't understand, because the lead actor here is John Boyega and the supporting actor is Harrison Ford.
Mm-hmm.
So people have been... There was a big backlash and a bit campaigning, asking the Saturn Awards, why did you do that? Please change it. And they changed it and they said, oh, that's true. With regards to how big John Boyega's character was in the film, we've now put John Boyega as a lead actor for the main actor awards. And that's just... This is what happens when the people from awards make a mistake, may not think, have those problems with regards to ethnicity, some ethnicity not being represented and everything. But when they listen, the problem is not that they did that in the first place, although that is a problem. The problem is, even after the backlash, the Oscars has not changed, which is what the Saturn Awards did.
I think that's a really great thing for the Saturn Awards to actually take into account, and I think it shows that there is definitely room for recognising that these mistakes are happening. And I will try to be fair to the Academy and say that the point that we raised much earlier in the show regarding how they're now going to try and diversify their membership is hopefully a step in the right direction. One hopes that kind of has a snowballing effect into a much wider range of membership and nominees in the future.
Hopefully it snowballs, but I feel like this is sadly something that's just going to change slowly over time as membership of the Academy, as people die, sadly, or not sadly.
Inevitably.
As they die and new people come in and new people, even if it is for issue films, black people winning Oscars and then they're probably getting put into the Academy because normally winners do vote as well.
Yes.
So it's a slow process and I think eventually, but I do think we... maybe not next year, but we will have a repeat of Oscar So White, I assume.
Yeah, I think we might. Let's remind ourselves, just for people who are listening, that Oscar So White is, from what we're discussing, less of an issue in itself, but more of like a symptom of what the wider problem regarding the industry is. But let us also remind ourselves that a lot of the other awards, such as the Saturn Awards, as Alex has pointed out, haven't fallen into the same trap. The Screen Actors Guild recognised Idris Elba, although, as we have said, Idris Elba was ineligible due to technicality issues regarding streaming. So his was... We're not sure whether his was going to end up being a snub. It was in, an eligibility issue. But the Screen Actors Guild did give nominations to Benicio del Toro. The Independent Spirit Awards, which took place last night, and recognised films with a budget of $5 million or less, which includes some, not all, but it does include some of the Oscar frontrunners, such as Room and Spotlight and The Big Short. In its four acting categories, Brie Larson was the only white winner. Idris Elba won for Best Supporting Actor. His co-star from Beast of No Nation, Abdullah Atta, won for Best Lead Actor. And for me, the most beautiful thing, Maya Taylor became the first transgender woman, and a trans woman of colour, no less, to win for Best Supporting Actress for Tangerine. So we've seen that other award shows are more... are slightly fairer, I would say, when it comes to actually recognising merit over campaign bias. And that's something we discussed slightly earlier as well. The over-reliance of the Oscars on campaigns and studio pressures. So we've seen other award shows do this, and I mean, we've discussed this, to be honest, but it just seems like the Oscars don't seem to pick up with what the other shows are doing.
I'm currently looking at, so you had the Caesar on Friday, which are the biggest film prize in France, and the best picture, so the best film, was given to Fatima, which is a film about an immigrant from North Africa and was also a cleaning lady, and like, it's just, it ticks so many boxes that the Oscar doesn't tick, that it's just, and it was nominated as, it was given the best film and the best supporting actress, and it's just, I mean, there are so many problems as well with Caesar.
Sure.
But it's something still that is done, that is not being done.
I'm assuming it's not nominated for an Oscar this time.
No.
No, I don't think so. No.
The BAFTAs also, lest we forget, did give nominations to Idris Elba and Benicio del Toro in supporting.
And the SAG Awards gave a nomination to Straight Outta Compton. Which, and I think Jason Mitchell, the guy who played Easy in the film, was nominated for something. But, I've mentioned earlier with the 10 possible Best Picture nominees that they expanded in 2010, I believe.
Yes.
They've only this year, I believe, used six.
Eight this year. Yeah.
They've still got two left.
Yes.
They could have nominated a film, even if it was nomination for nomination's sake.
Yes.
They could have done it.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things with the 10 nominations, one that's been popping up quite a few times now, is just for listeners who might not be aware, previously the Academy only used to nominate five films for Best Picture. Since 2010, they nominate a minimum of five, but they can nominate up to 10, provided each nominee picks up a certain percentage of votes. In the in its first year of ruling, we had 10 nominees. Since then, you have had between 8 and 9, and that includes 8 this year. And among the films that didn't get nominations and have been cited as snubs include films such as Straight Outta Compton. When this happened last year, Selma did pick up a nomination for Best Film, but it only picked up one other nomination, which was for Best Original Song, which we played earlier on the show. You didn't have a nomination for the likes of Ava DuVernay for Best Director, or David Oyelowo for Best Actor, which was an absolute shame. And that seems to be something that keeps coming back. Now, we've obviously focused a lot of our discussions regarding people of colour in front of the camera, because that is where the visibility is. But let's also not forget that the systemic discrimination against people of colour extends to the creative teams as well. The films that deal with quote-unquote black issues, such as Straight Outta Compton, which did get a screenplay nomination at this year's Oscars, have been written by white men. This is not to say that white people shouldn't be writing black roles. This is by no means me suggesting that there needs to be some sort of racial boundaries with regards to who can write what, but what it does seem to suggest is that there is an injustice that a disproportionate representation that stretches into the creative teams as well. Alejandro Iñárritu is probably the most high-profile nominee of colour at this year's Oscars. He is up for his second Best Director award in a row. And of course, you had Steve McQueen for 12 Years a Slave the year before that. He lost to Alfonso Cuarón, which was cited as one of the most diverse years ever, despite the fact that when you think of diverse, it was still out of five nominees, two people of colour, one black, one Hispanic, and three white men, and no women. So you have that issue popping up over and over again. And the question of disproportionate representation needs to go behind the scenes as well. It needs to go behind the camera. And Ava DuVernay has spoken at length about this. She was the director, as we've mentioned, for Selma. She had been tapped to direct Black Panther for the MCU. She declined to do so. But she hasn't, she's been cited as being both, she's been cited as being someone who stands out both for being a female director and a black director. And very little has been done to build on that as well. What do we think about bringing the discussion beyond just actors and actresses? How urgent do we think that is?
I like it because I feel like if we have people casting and directing who are people of colour, then it will kind of... I think it will be a nice way to infiltrate the industry.
Mm-hmm.
People will see that there's a more active input from people of colour in the industry, and therefore it will be like a subliminal message almost. So almost like it won't even have to be thought about.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's the same problem as with the guild, in that if you have more people of colour, then they may think about looking for roles of colours, whereas white people may just look for white people. The example that I've used a few times of this, a director I really like was Asian American, is that she said in an interview that she always tried to cast diverse people and Asian American because she felt that she wasn't represented. So if we have more people behind the camera for director, for writers and everything, it may also bring more people in front of the camera and just give examples to people, so that then more people from those minorities may want and do those jobs. And yeah, it's just a virtuous circle.
I think you also get the weirdly positive spin of, because they're not so fronted facing as the camera and their face isn't out there as much, you've got a chance of actual merit just shining through.
Mm-hmm.
Like Emmanuel Lubezki, who is up for cinematographer third time in a row.
Yep.
Gravity, Birdman and Revenant, and he's probably going to win because Revenant was shot amazingly and with natural light, which is beyond impressive. But he's a Mexican cinematographer, and so his work and the quality and how good he is shines through because it's not frontward facing, yeah. and the Academy can not ignore his race or his nationality.
But doesn't
they
take it into account. It
takes
yeah.
into less account, because how many of them see the film, see the cinematography, I bet some of them don't know what he looks like.
No. I mean, I would be very surprised if every single one of them even knew his name, as opposed to going, I want to give The Revenant
yeah.
a cinematography nomination versus I want
so
to
I
give...
So I think you have the opportunity for a good amount of diversity behind the camera, maybe mm-hmm. more than in front of the camera.
Yeah. And I think that would then extend in front as well,
yeah,
of
course. I think that's the place to start. While we're going through a struggle of getting people in front of the camera, it's good to have them where we can.
So what we're saying, I think, is that it's good to have that diversity work both ways and not have what happened on. And I do apologise, I cannot remember the name of the show that this happened on, but it was a casting show a few months ago where there was a controversy with regards to Matt Damon, who is part of... It was a reality show regarding the creative process behind making a film, and part of the casting team, part of the casting crew included a black woman. She was the only non-white male in the casting group, and she raised points regarding diversity, and she was consistently shot down because that shouldn't be an issue, but it clearly is. So I think we can agree that diversity needs to happen both behind and in front of the camera. And indeed, we seem to be going towards the direction of greater diversity behind the camera is perhaps easier to implement and will hopefully lead to greater diversity in front of the camera as well. So, Anoni, who is the singer for Manta Ray, did not receive an invitation to perform at the Academy Awards, despite the fact that all of the other performers for Best Original Song have always traditionally been asked to be part of the broadcast. Now, she has said in a statement she's very aware of the fact that she is not as commercial or as noticeable as nominees such as Lady Gaga and Sam Smith, both of whom will be performing tonight. So she has made it very clear that she doesn't believe her snub is to do with her trans identity. However, she's choosing to boycott the Oscars instead of attending as a potential nominee because she feels that it is still inequality.
I'm sure there have been performances before by non-commercial artists that have been nominated and performed, so...
Are you suggesting that there might be perhaps a subconscious element of it, but that a part of it is to do with her transness?
I think so, because I also think that that because she's trans and there's a greater awareness of trans people and
issues
and trans issues, especially in the last year or so, like it's completely skyrocketed in terms of socially. I think people are interested by it. People want to be more supportive of the trans community and underrepresented communities. So I think it would have made a more commercial point. Like, people would have watched just to support.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to really tell. Like, my ignorance is shining through a little bit here because I don't remember every musical performance of all the Oscars I've watched. But it's hard to tell whether it is one endeavor, because last year we had Tegan and Sarah playing, and they are lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be an example of more diverse group of singers, but they're also quite popular.
Exactly.
So it's hard.
It's difficult to know where the decision came from.
But it seems, if everyone else is performing,
yeah,
it seems like it's quite a conscious decision. But it's hard to tell if the conscious decision is them being transphobic or them being...
She's not commercial
just
enough.
Just not commercial yeah. enough.
You were raising the point during the song break about the In Memoriam segment, and if you'd like to go into that a bit, I think that would be a really
yeah,
good thing.
Along with Chris Rock hosting the Oscars, a way that they could show their support for diversity, one person who sadly died in January, David Bowie, was someone who blurred gender boundaries, was a bisexual man. This could be an easy jumping off point to show their support of diversity, their support of artists, their support of what's viewed as the weird and the strange and the odd
outside
to
the norms. Yeah,
outside the norms.
I think that's a really good point. And, you know, the point of having Chris Rock as the host, because there are some calls for a lot of, from a lot of quarters for him to boycott the Oscars, of him to step down as the host. But I think it's good that he hasn't, because Chris Rock, particularly with the brand of comedy he has, he'll be able to roast the industry quite well, I think, on the night.
I can't wait for the best.
I'm sure he will.
I can't wait for the best of all the jokes and puns. And
I'm pretty sure there's going to be, at some point, is going to be welcome to the whitest night. I mean, Neil Patrick Harris cracked that joke last year, and he's white too. So I'm pretty sure there's a scope for Chris Rock. I mean, there's obviously the scope for Chris Rock to do the same. But I'm really glad that you brought up David Bowie as well, because the whole thing about diversity, it's very visible with regards to the race question, but diversity sometimes doesn't get as much of recognition when it comes to questions of gender and sexuality. There's obviously a huge question regarding female directors, which constantly keeps coming up every year at the Oscars. But queer performers such as Kitana Rodriguez and Maya Taylor, both of whom are trans women of colour who got snubbed from the acting categories, often don't get the same level of attention, and I think it's important that they do as well. I mean, you do have some level of queer visibility at the Oscars. Let's not forget Dustin Lance Black winning for Milk, and you do have actors winning four queer roles.
And Neil Patrick Harris
hosting last year. Also this year, lest we forget, both Lady Gaga and Sam Smith are nominated, and they are queer artists. So it's not completely invisible, but it's something that sometimes doesn't get included in the discussions.
And the actors themselves might not be queer or gay, but the film
for the Danish Girl.
Jared Leto, and Carol
as well.
Seems to have more visibility on that front than representation, it seems.
And let's also not forget that sometimes the backlash for this diversity issue can become very complicated in and of itself. Charlotte Rampling, who's nominated for Best Actress for 45 Years, made a very, very blunt statement suggesting that complaining about Oscars being so white is racism against white people.
Why, Charlotte? Why did you have to say that?
You can be prejudiced towards whites, but you can't be racist, because it's about systemic
oppression
and other than the minority group. But whatever.
Yeah, I think we are running to the end of the show, but I think where we'd like to end, and I realise we might have slightly flippantly thrown in Charlotte Rampling, but I mention her comment because I think it shows the very difficult balance between representation and meritocracy. And I think there is a very good point that needs to be made regarding not nominating someone for the sake of representation, which we did raise earlier, and I think that is a very valid point. So I would like to be slightly presumptuous and conclude on behalf of my fellow panellists that what we are trying to suggest is there is systemic discrimination and systemic injustice within the industry. This needs to be tackled to provide greater opportunities, and in doing so, provide more roles for people to actually show their talent off and therefore get nominations. Or as Viola Davis so beautifully said, you don't get nominated for roles that don't exist. Let's create the roles and then let's take charge of them ourselves. And on that note, I would like to end the show. Please remember that the film show is on at 5 o'clock today with a 2-hour special of the Oscars with predictions. And we also have a podcast tomorrow recapping the Oscars.